Welcome to the Apologia podcast, the audio-only archive of the Apologia YouTube channel. Note that some content was designed to go with visuals, but the imagination can be a powerful thing. If you enjoy the podcast, please consider giving it a 5-star rating on the podcast app you're using now to help us reach more people. Or, since this endeavor is ad-free, consider going a step further and supporting us for as little as $1 a month at patreon.com/apologia. But for now, let's get to the episode. Part of the Apologetics series, posted April 6th, 2020, titled Claims Aren't Evidence, featuring Matt Dillahunty.
Have you ever watched a Matt Dillahunty debate?
Yes.
And thought, God, there's something wrong with what he's saying, but I just can't pinpoint, I can't figure out what it is.
So you take to YouTube to demonstrate to everyone that you don't understand?
So just stick around. You're going to enjoy this.
Welcome to Apologia, where a former Christian takes a look at the claims of Christians. If you're new to the channel, take a second to tap on the subscribe button so that you'll be notified when new science, theology, and news videos come out. Today, I'm pleased to be joined by Matt Dillahunty.
That's nice.
Who was recently the subject of a Capturing Christianity video.
That's not so nice.
So about a year ago, I hosted a debate between Matt Dillahunty and Mike Winger on my channel on the evidence for the resurrection of Jesus.
For the record, I have not watched the video.
Oh, okay.
I watched the first, minute and a half or so of it. I realized what was happening, and I was like, all right, rather than turning this into dueling videos, I was like, I've worked with those guys before. Let me just go over to the Facebook page and post why what he's supposedly saying just isn't accurate.
Right.
And it got completely ignored. And then it was like, look at what another atheist has to say. And then it was like a quote from you. And I'm like, what the fuck did Paul have to do with this goddamn video? I'm trying to talk to you to explain a clear misunderstanding, and you're just worried about how good the video's doing?
I mean, I don't want to darken your day if you'd rather not listen to it.
Oh, I'm happy to address whatever he's actually saying as presented by you in this context.
During Matt's opening speech, he said that claims are not evidence. Now, as we'll see throughout this video, it's actually pretty easy to see what's wrong with this idea. So let's watch a few clips from Matt to get the context.
When you say Jesus appeared to the 500, that's just a claim. We've spoken to no one from the 500, no one who was there to even speak to the 500 or anything else.
What's important there is that Jesus spoke to the 500 is a claim. And if somebody says, I'm one of the 500 and I heard Jesus spoke to me, that's a claim plus testimonial evidence. And that's the conflation of the two is what he's ignoring.
But it's not the evidence. It is the claim. It is a bunch of claims, and it is claims upon claims as well.
It's really unclear how this distinction is supposed to actually work. So a little later on in the discussion, I asked him to clarify what he meant by this distinction. I'll play the clip for you guys, we'll listen to his response, and then I'll offer a breakdown, a Bertusian breakdown of what I think is going on here. So claims versus evidence. Would you mind defining those two? Like, what's that distinction?
Well, so a claim is an assertion that something is such and so, and evidence is actually evidence that supports the fact that it's thus and so.
So yes, to be fair, on the spot when asked to distinguish claims and evidence, I did in fact just say the claim is the claim and the evidence is the evidence. I was relying on the fact that we'd had a long discussion prior to that where I'd been a little bit more robust. But yeah, on the spot, that's a shitty, the claim is the claim and the evidence is the thing that supports the claim. That's not explanatory. And so I think what probably ends up happening in this is that I'm focused on the resurrection and the epistemology behind it. And for somebody to come along and say, can you please explain what you mean? What's the difference between claims and evidence? My brain probably just wasn't thinking in those terms of, let me put this in simple terms so that people can get it, because I've been explaining this shit for, a decade or at least the last hour. So a claim is a positive statement of some event or fact that is purported to be true, and evidence is the collection of supporting information that lends itself to either demonstrating that the claim is likely true or that the claim is not likely true.
I think it's important to note how unhelpful this distinction, this explanation that he gave actually is.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. I wish I'd have done better.
Sometimes people make assertions or statements for no deeper reason. Let's call this an unreasonable assertion. But other times, people make assertions because they have some deeper reason for thinking that that assertion is true. I call this a reasonable assertion.
I'm starting to go back to my definition of claim and evidence and think that they were actually brilliant. I mean, yes, I used evidence to describe evidence, but the key thing there was assertion. The claim is a statement of a proposed fact. I'm going to propose that Jesus rose from the dead. Cool. What is the evidence for? What is the reason for that? For him to come in and say that there's reasonable claims and unreasonable claims is to kind of jump to the end, because the whole thing we're trying to do is figure out, here's a claim. Is it reasonable to accept that claim? And the basis on which we would accept that claim and call it reasonable is the supporting evidence for it. And by evidence, of course, we're talking about facts and data that are otherwise accepted or individual testimonial accounts that we find reliable. He's essentially saying that there are reasonable claims and unreasonable claims. I don't know that that's anything other than just another assertion or a shortcut on his hand to rely on our intuitions about what is reasonable rather than the evidence about what's reasonable.
An unreasonable assertion would be if my daughter, my four-year-old daughter, told me that there are aliens on Mars eating buckets of ice cream every day. If I were to ask her where she got that from, she'd probably just say, well, I don't know, I made it up, I'm pretending. That's what she would say. So let's contrast that with a reasonable assertion. A reasonable assertion would be if she told me that while she was at school, one of the boys in her class fell down and like busted his lip. If I asked her where she got that from, she would quickly tell me, oh, well, you know, I saw it happen. So a reasonable assertion is based on something deeper, like an experience.
Oh, this is worse than I could have imagined. What he's actually doing here is almost exactly what I predicted he was going to do about 30 seconds before hearing this, which is relying on our intuitions. His daughter has a claim, his four-year-old daughter has a claim that there are aliens in buckets of ice cream on another planet. And when asked where she got that, she says, I just made that up. Well, his reasoning for concluding that this was an unreasonable assertion was in asking for supporting evidence and getting nothing that he found reasonable. And when his daughter said that a boy fell down at school, he asks, where'd you get that? And she says, I saw it happen. And he's concluding that that is reasonable. What if his daughter had said, there were monsters dancing around in my bedroom last night? Well, where did you get that from? I saw it happen. Does that make the claim reasonable? His distinction of a reasonable claim and unreasonable claim is really, here's a claim. Let me analyze the available evidence for it, which, by the way, anytime we're assessing the available evidence for something, we are looking at it within the context of what we already know and understand to be true and reliable within the world. When somebody says, I got a new puppy, well, we all already know that dogs are real and puppies are real and people keep them as pets and people do. This collection of information exists in all of us. And this is what I mean when I say that he's relying on our intuitions rather than actually providing some clearer understanding of the distinction between a claim and an evidence. He is conflating the claim and the evidence into one package and saying this one's reasonable and this one's unreasonable. And most of his audience, including me, is likely to agree with him that the example of his daughter talking about aliens dancing in ice cream is unreasonable because it's not supported by evidence, because he basically poisoned the well right off the bat by saying, when I ask her, where did you get this? She says, I made it up. So he's constructed a straw man unreasonable claim and a straw man reasonable claim in order to leverage all of our intuitions about this, which has nothing to do with the fact that there are two claims here. Claim A is there are aliens dancing in ice cream, and claim B is a boy fell down and broke his lip. The one about a boy falling down and breaking his lip is already supported by the bulk of evidence that we all have about what happens. Children are clumsy. Children fall down. We've all busted our lip or seen somebody bust their lip. There's nothing at all that's remotely extraordinary about this claim. As a matter of fact, it's incredibly mundane. But we're relying on our understanding of the world and what is true. When the alien one comes in, we have no evidence for aliens. We have no evidence for ice cream on another planet or aliens dancing in ice cream. But we do have good evidence that four-year-olds sometimes make up fanciful stories. And so all we're all doing there is relying on our intuition. That doesn't tell us which claim is true. It really also doesn't tell us on its own which claim is reasonable or unreasonable. He's relying on our intuitions to reach a point where we seem to be instantly able to say, that's a reasonable claim. That's an unreasonable claim. That's a reasonable claim. And that one's reasonable. And that one's unreasonable. And we all know this. That's what he's relying on. Not here's a claim and here's the supporting evidence for it. He hasn't done anything to make a distinction between the claim and evidence. Instead, he's either mashing the claim and evidence together, which is exactly what a testimonial account is. If the claim is Jesus rose from the dead, that is different from the testimonial, which is I witnessed Jesus rise from the dead. Because the second one is a claim, Jesus rose from the dead, and it's supported by direct evidence of I witnessed this occurrence. If his daughter said, great-grandma came to me and spoke to me, he might conclude that that is a reasonable claim, that somehow or another, the spirit of a loved one may have revisited the planet, because those things are consistent with what he already accepts to be true. And that's why our intuitions about what is reasonable or unreasonable actually betray us. Because in that sense, what becomes reasonable is just what is consistent with what I already accept and know. And by and large, we all operate that way. But if we're looking at this claim and somebody else doesn't think that it's a reasonable claim, then we have to present the supporting evidence for that claim such that someone else would find it reasonable, not just with our own baggage.
My daughter's assertion that there's aliens on Mars eating buckets of ice cream every day.
I thought he said...
He said eating ice cream, not dancing.
Oh, and the first time he didn't say dancing?
No, it was just eating. But, you know, dancing is more fun.
No, can we go back?
Sure. Okay, let's do it. You don't trust my eyewitness testimony? Come on.
I just remember something in my head going, dancing and ice cream, that's weird.
Would be if my daughter, my four-year-old daughter, told me that there are aliens on Mars eating buckets of ice cream every day.
This is an example of the reliability of eyewitness testimony, right?
Yeah, I don't know what went through my head that I heard dancing and thought, but I would love to know what was going on in my brain when I was like, why would she be talking about aliens dancing and ice cream? I don't know. I'm 51 as of yesterday, so fuck it. I'm just getting old.
Happy birthday, Matt.
Thanks.
But now let's complicate things a little bit. Suppose that instead of telling me directly, she told her teacher, who then told my wife, who then told me. I'd still be in possession of pretty good evidence that a boy in her class fell down and busted his lip.
Yes, Cameron, you would be in possession of pretty good evidence. Why on earth do you want me to define claims and evidence, which I did poorly, when it's clear to me that you understand the distinction between the claim and evidence here? The claim is that a boy fell down, and the evidence is either your daughter tells you that she observed it, or she told the teacher who tells your wife who tells you. When we assess a claim and the evidence for the claim, there's a heuristic model I've talked about before, which doesn't necessarily happen in a particular order. We have trained ourselves to be so good at it that we do it almost reflexively. And that is, first of all, do I already believe this? Because if I already believe it, I don't have to go any further, or I probably should, but I am unlikely to go any further. The second one is, what is the source and how reliable is the source? The third one is, how does this claim fit with the facts of the universe that I already accept? Because there's a question we ask ourselves, which is, if I were to accept that this claim was true, what other things do I already accept about the universe as true? Would I have to change or stop accepting because of a conflict between the two? If you present a claim that requires me to foundationally change my understanding of the universe, then the evidence supporting your claim has to be stronger than the weight of all the evidence for the things that I already accept. When we look at evidence, we try to overcome our biases. And so when he puts together, here's a reasonable assertion, here's an unreasonable assertion, he's already injecting the available evidence and relying on our intuitions about the available evidence that we already have.
And what this implies is that some claims can provide good evidence. In particular, what I've argued is that reasonable assertions can provide or can constitute good evidence.
They become reasonable assertions because there is good evidence.
I wish I had. Did you go find my comment on his channel?
I did, actually. Like, let me put it up on the screen. One sec.
Because I'm pretty sure that I addressed this.
If someone says, I saw X happen, that's a claim in the sense of an utterance. But it's a combination of a claim, X happened, with anecdotal testimonial evidence included. You've evidently made an entire video to claim that I'm wrong when I'm speaking discreetly, and you're engaged in sloppy conflation of a claim plus evidence, which, by the way, is still a separate issue from how much evidence is sufficient to warrant belief. Instead of trying to find a gotcha and thinking you found a flaw in my epistemology, it'd help if you actually tried to understand what I said and sound epistemology, because videos like this are just making you look foolish.
Yeah, so that was the distinction I made. I saw X happen is a claim X happened and supporting evidence for it. I saw this. Whether or not that's sufficient to consider the claim reasonable or whether it's sufficient to warrant belief that the claim is likely true, those are separate issues. But at no point when I say claims aren't evidence, am I saying nothing uttered by a human being includes a claim and includes evidence as well. That's preposterous.
Before you watch any further, I think I know what you're thinking.
Uh-oh. I'm going to bet that he doesn't know what I'm thinking. So I'm here. I'm going to tell you what I'm thinking, because as I pointed out, he's constructed this reasonable and unreasonable, relying on our intuitions about the world. So when he talks about implicit claims and explicit claims, what I'm thinking is, that's not what you did. I was sitting here talking about an explicit discrete claim, and you went with your implicit, hang on, here's a claim, I saw this happen, and that includes evidence, and thought I was excluding that when I wasn't. That's what's going on in my head.
I've seen this. His mind reading is terrible.
That I'm ignoring Matt's context here. I'm ignoring the context of where this claim came from. When Matt says that claims are not evidence, he's not talking about every claim. He's talking about specific claims, namely claims about the miraculous, claims about like what happened to a boy falling down at school. That is not anything that's ordinary. But a claim about a miraculous event, that is extraordinary.
No, he's not actually trying to read minds. What he's trying to do is make it look like he's anticipated an objection and has already thought it through and has a counter for it, when what he's actually presenting isn't the actual objection and this isn't a counter. It's like, my opponent might say that I'm doing this, but I'm not doing this because of this, when that's not what your opponent was going to be objecting to in the first place. I went through this with Dinesh on stage. I've never been strawmanned more thoroughly and completely in my entire life, because on several occasions he would make his case and then he would say something like,
now you might say, I'm going to wait until the alien walks on stage and then I'll believe it.
And I'm sitting here going, I'm literally sitting here on stage. Instead of saying what I might say, why not ask me what I would say? Because then we actually accurately represent my views rather than you strawmanning. And I have the same feeling about Cameron here, because I went to the Facebook page and replied in order to try to get a discussion going about this and got no response. Instead, it was just, oh, my Dillahunty video is doing really good. Well, good for you. Let me take my coattails and move on.
All eyewitness testimony is delivered as an utterance, verbal or written, but not all utterances contain eyewitness testimony.
Yeah, when I say a claim is not evidence, I'm being as discreet as I can about the claim is an assertion of a fact that is proposed to be true or likely true. The evidence is the data that are supporting that proposition. So the claim is a proposition, then the evidence is separate from that. That doesn't mean that I couldn't construct a sentence that includes both a claim and some data supporting evidence. That's obviously trivial. I saw Paul drink out of a coffee cup. The claim is Paul drank out of a coffee cup. That claim is independent of me or anything else. As soon as we inject me seeing it into it, now we have a claim, Paul drank out of a coffee cup, and the supporting evidence, I saw it. Now, I saw it can sometimes be a perfectly reasonable justification, even though we know that eyewitness testimony is awful, even though I've already misheard something in this video in the process of analyzing it to the point where I came up with something that was even more ridiculous. Cameron was relying on our intuitions, and I took that to the next level of saying, oh, my intuitions would be that they'd be dancing in ice cream instead of eating ice cream. You know, it's sort of a cautionary tale that when somebody says, I saw this happening, that is an anecdotal testimonial account of what they claim to have witnessed. And the distinction that I often have made is, if somebody says to me, I was abducted by aliens, I don't assume that they are lying. I believe that this person is honestly trying to give me a description of what they experienced, but I'm not convinced that their description of what they experienced is in fact accurate to reality.
it's possible for someone to experience something that they would describe that way, and yet that isn't in and of itself confirmation that they were in fact abducted by aliens.
Because there's a difference between this new claim and what Matt originally said. Matt did not define a claim as a claim about something miraculous. Rather, listen again to what he said.
So a claim is an assertion that something is such and so.
This is...
Which is funny that when he goes back to show that there's something wrong, he goes to the claim definition, which was fine. Wasn't complete, but it was fine. And not the evidence question, which was a mess, where I used the word to define the word. And I should have said that a claim, it is an assertion of a fact. It is a statement. It is a proposition. It is the factual claim that we are trying to assess to determine whether or not belief is warranted, whether or not it's reasonable to conclude that it's true. And the evidence to support that claim is the collection of facts and data that are consistent with the state of affairs were that claim to be true.
When Matt is asked to clarify his position so that they can be analyzed at a deeper level, the explanation that Matt is going to give is not going to be entirely accurate unless you already sort of follow his work and understand what he's trying to get at.
I'm very grateful that Cameron acknowledged that, because the fact of the matter is not only have I been hosting the Atheist Experience 15 years, but I've been putting up content all over the place and engaged in many different debates. But I'm pretty sure that we could go out and not only find a number of different examples. I doubt there's anything original that I've said here today that is substantive to the issue. But when Cameron says, it's really sometimes difficult to follow unless you've followed Matt and all his work. Yes, congratulations. You've basically just acknowledged that what you did was in a debate that wasn't specifically about this subject. You asked me a question. I gave a fumbled shorthand answer that was based on an understanding of all the things that I've said before, and who knows how many other things that I had explained during the opening. But Cameron's basically acknowledging, rather than paying attention to everything that Matt said, I picked out this example of him poorly defining something from a debate that was about a different subject and decided to make a video about it. Well, great, Cameron. If you go back to like my initial YouTube series on logical absolutes, you might find something. You might also find something in the various videos where I've discussed epistemology. You might find something here, but in every one of those cases, it would have been very easy to say, you gave an answer during this debate about claims and evidence that I don't think was very good. And I would say, what was the thing that you don't think was very good? And just as Paul has done here, you could have said, hey, here's the clip. You said this. And I would have said, yeah, that's crappy. The claim definition's okay, but the evidence definition is crappy because I used the word. And then we could have had the discussion that Paul and I are having and reached a clarification, because at no point am I saying anecdotal testimony doesn't count. I'm saying it is a conflation of a claim plus some supporting evidence. And whether or not it's sufficient to justify belief is a separate issue.
All right, so now let's jump back into analysis mode and see exactly what's going on here. A claim about some miraculous event cannot constitute evidence that the event happened.
Wow. So apparently what Cameron's done here is, beginning with a potential misunderstanding about when I say claims aren't evidence, I'm not saying that it is impossible to utter a statement that includes a claim and some evidence. Obviously, that's true. It is true that I can utter a sentence that includes a claim and evidence. I saw Paul drink out of a coffee cup. There is evidence there, and that is my testimonial account that I witnessed this. What he's got on the screen, a claim about some miraculous event cannot constitute evidence that the event happened. I wholeheartedly agree with what's on the screen, but the part that's highlighted in blue that says about some miraculous event can just be removed. A claim cannot constitute evidence that the event happened. And in that, I'm talking about a discrete claim of the fact. A claim plus supporting evidence can constitute evidence that the event happened. He's taken this claims aren't evidence and then said, well, some claims can include evidence, to which I would agree, and then tried to make it look as if I'm saying, nope, because it's a claim, because it is something that some individual uttered, or because it is a discrete statement, it can contain no evidence. And that's bizarre, because statements are how we communicate everything. So every bit of evidence that we would ever communicate is can be expressed in a statement form. You have seen the blood spatter evidence. If you look at this image, this dot and this dot and this dot and the way they're splayed out are consistent with flinging off from a ball peen hammer or whatever else. All of it has to be expressed in the sense of statements. So it seems, and I know that we're not even halfway through the video, that what's happened here is I said claims aren't evidence. Cameron said, well, I could make a claim that includes some evidence. Let me make a whole video about how Matt's wrong because I can show that there's a claim. When we're talking about two different things, he's talking about a claim as in an utterance, and I'm talking about a claim as in a raw proposition of fact.
One more time. A claim about some miraculous event cannot constitute evidence that the event happened.
This is the part that gets me. I already said you can remove the blue portion of what he's saying there about a miraculous event, but he can't. Because his purpose is to create a fictional straw man that says, Matt is setting up a special scenario such that claims of a miraculous nature cannot include evidence. And so that's why the whole blue section is there. My position is that a discrete claim, an assertion of a fact, is in and of itself never evidence for the claim. That doesn't mean that it can't be combined in a sentence that includes evidence. But he wants to portray this as if I have set up a special scenario by which miraculous claims can't be evidence. Well, first of all, what the hell is miraculous? Why do we get to use that word in the first place? How did we conclude that this is miraculous? And by the way, I'm pretty sure that in this context, given the way I've seen Cameron think on this subject already in this video, what he means is the same thing he means by unreasonable earlier, that if there's a reasonable claim, Matt's okay with it. But if there's an unreasonable claim, Matt's not okay with it. But he can't say that because then he's acknowledging that the things that he wants to highlight as miraculous are in fact unreasonable. He's so tied up in this. He desperately wants to show, hey, sometimes claims are evidence. Okay, Cameron, I accept that it is possible to claim evidence. That's not a gotcha. Maybe instead of claim, this is why I went with utterance, I think, in the Facebook post. Maybe what we should be saying is, here's a proposition, and here is the support for the proposition. And it is possible to make an utterance that includes both the proposition and some support for that proposition.
And he's twisted that somehow. He's arguing against philosophical naturalism for some reason.
Yeah, like I've set up a special scenario for the miraculous. I like the fact that he went with miraculous instead of supernatural, because there are people who go into remission out of certain illness. And I understand the intuition to say that is miraculous, because what we really mean is that is extraordinary. That just doesn't happen very often. That's something that we don't understand. And if you use miraculous in that sense, I'm fine with it. And so you could present a claim that I would consider miraculous and present evidence for it that would lead me to conclude that this metaphorically miraculous thing occurred. And that still doesn't mean that the origin or explanation for the event is supernatural in nature. I don't know how we get to that point. And so it's funny that he creates a reasonable claim and an unreasonable claim, and then we move on to a miraculous thing as if I'm somehow opposed to things that are miraculous, when no, the only thing that you could say that I was opposed to more accurately would be the supernatural. And it's not that I'm opposed to someone demonstrating the truth of the supernatural. It's that nobody's done that. And so all these assertions about the supernatural just come off as unreasonable claims because of my understanding of the world.
What is it about miraculous claims that disqualify them from having evidence? What is it?
Nothing.
Some skeptics will parody resurrection arguments by saying, well, look, we have all of these claims of alien abductions, but that doesn't mean that aliens exist. Now, before I started working on the next part of this video, I actually went and looked at some of the more popular alien abduction stories.
You know what's been really interesting is before he went and worked on the next part of this video, if he'd actually gone out and investigated some of the things that I'd actually said about the broader subject, or if, since he and I had already been in talks to potentially do a debate, if he would have just reached out to me by email and said, hey, you've said claims aren't evidence and I'm having some difficulty understanding that. I think you're wrong and here's why. But instead, he decided to spend his time going out to research alien abduction accounts. Now, I can't say that this is the actions of someone who is intentionally trying to strawman my position. oh, wait, yes, I can. These actions are consistent with someone who would be intentionally trying to strawman my position. I don't know. I don't have enough evidence to conclude that Cameron is necessarily trying to intentionally strawman my position. But how lazy do you have to be to go out and research alien abduction accounts when you're doing a video about how I'm wrong instead of actually talking to me about how I'm wrong?
Faced with something which doesn't fit our worldview, we have a choice. We can try to jam it into conventional explanations, or we can say, well, maybe we don't know everything. Maybe we need to expand our notions of reality to say, I don't know. There's a mystery here.
I don't know exactly where Cameron's getting ready to go. But if Cameron is not getting ready to say, because of this, I now believe people have been abducted by aliens, then everything that came out of his mouth about aliens is a waste of time. And him propping up the scientists saying that we should look at alternate explanations is also a big fat red herring being waved around in your face. Because if he's not willing to do that for alien abduction scenarios, for which we have many and varied accounts, then he certainly shouldn't be arguing that we should do that for a resurrection account. He couldn't possibly do that, could he?
Now, if you want to tell me, oh, look, Cameron, it's just about the evidence. Like, all I care about is the evidence. I just want to follow the evidence wherever it leads. If that's the case for you, you want to say that, then you can't arbitrarily pick and choose what explanations you're going to consider and which ones you're not.
Please demonstrate that I'm arbitrarily excluding anything. In fact, what I'm doing is saying, I'm not convinced this event happened, but even if I were to be convinced this happened, we don't yet have an explanation for it. I'm with the scientist on the alien abduction thing saying we should continue looking for explanations. I'm not ruling any of them out. I haven't ruled out God as an explanation. I haven't ruled out the supernatural as an explanation. I'm saying that if you want to propose that as an explanation, you need to show why it should be reasonably considered as a candidate explanation for this event. But since you cannot even get to the point where you can demonstrate that the event occurred, your entire process of talking about an explanation for something that is unconfirmed is a bigger waste of time than it is to go out and research alien abduction stories instead of talking to the person who you're doing a rebuttal to.
That's literally the definition of confirmation bias.
It's like Cameron grasps like 75% of the foundation of an idea and then kind of sloppily moves that to a completely different idea. We should be skeptical and we should evaluate evidence and we should have good reasons for all of this. And you can tell me that you want to follow the evidence where it leads, but you don't get to arbitrarily exclude candidate explanations. Well, let's look at what he's actually talking about here. You haven't presented evidence that a resurrection actually occurred. You haven't presented evidence that it's a miracle. Although if it occurred, I'll call it a miracle just so we can skip past one of the steps. But then you want me to acknowledge that the best explanation for this is God. Well, you haven't provided evidence that that is even a candidate plausible explanation. So what's happening here when it comes to confirmation bias, which is a tendency to interpret new evidence as confirmation of one's existing beliefs or theories, Cameron's the one that's engaging in this because his existing belief is that there is in fact a God who can do miraculous things from a supernatural origin. And then when he's presented with a claim that Jesus rose from the dead, he's interpreting that under the envelope of course, it's already plausible that God is an explanation for this. But if you start with, I'm not convinced that God is a plausible candidate explanation, then you don't get to hear about the resurrection and have that bias in place. This happened during the debate with Mike Lacona. Mike Lacona was supposed to be debating the resurrection of Jesus against me at a Baptist church here in Austin. The debate's online, my review of the debate's online. And the question at hand was
Jesus raised from the dead?
And Mike got up to present two lines of evidence. The first,
empirical data strongly suggests that reality has a supernatural dimension.
And the second line of evidence was,
historical data strongly suggests that Jesus rose from the dead.
But he spent most of his time on the first part. And so he talked about Ouija boards and floating trash can lids and churches praying for a specific dollar amount and then receiving that. And he used all of that to suggest these things are incredibly unlikely. Therefore, it's reasonable for us to conclude that reality probably has a supernatural component to it. And the entire point of doing that entire first line of argument was so that when he talked about the resurrection, he had already given people a bias towards the plausibility of supernatural occurrences, such that the resurrection no longer seemed to be implausible. and therefore an historical account of someone rising from the dead, if your brain contains the bias that these sorts of things are plausible, is all of a sudden less rejectable once that confirmation bias takes hold. But the point was that second half of his presentation is the only thing that mattered. This wasn't what is the best explanation for the resurrection. Was the resurrection supernatural? It was, did it happen? And so the only thing that mattered is, can we produce a collection of evidence, historical, testimonial, physical, whatever, to show that this account of a resurrection actually happened? And if you could do that, you would win the debate, because at no point was the debate about what's the best explanation for this. Was it a miracle from God? It was, did it happen? And so he spent the majority of his time talking about Ouija boards and trash can lids to build up this straw man about the supernatural, just so that he wouldn't have to answer and could imply and rely on confirmation bias when he says, here's the historical evidence that a resurrection happened. And that's not all that implausible given these other things that have happened. That is almost exactly what Cameron's doing now. He probably heard about the resurrection before he believed in God. Possibly. I don't know Cameron's actual history. But when the two are going side by side, for example, when you're in church and you have an authority figure telling you these things happened and you accept them based on authority, and then you have all these people around you who believe something to reinforce your biases, then that makes you more predisposed to accepting those things. So it's not the skeptic that is arbitrarily excluding anything. The skeptic is saying, I will accept God as a proposition, provided you can present evidence for it. But we don't even need to consider God as a candidate explanation for a resurrection if you cannot first present evidence that is reasonable to lead to the conclusion that a resurrection actually occurred.
That's exactly the issue I'm having now with Cameron as I go through his loads of evidence of the resurrection podcast. He's waving his hand, searching for the best explanation of facts that I don't accept as facts, that he hasn't demonstrated as facts. What's the best explanation for this empty tomb? That there wasn't one.
Now, for the record, and I'm going to be very clear about this, I do not think that claims of alien abductions prove that aliens exist.
What? It's like one of the two of us is actually practiced at understanding things and potentially reading minds and predicting where people will go, and the other one is Cameron.
The following distinction I'm going to make might help clear up some of the confusion. In the beginning of the video, I argued that some claims can constitute some evidence. But in my view, that you have some evidence that X happened does not necessarily mean that you have sufficient evidence that X happened. I can have some evidence that Frank is the murderer without having sufficient evidence that Frank is the murderer.
I agree. This is the part of my life that is the most frustrating. Cameron is not an idiot. Cameron has a decent understanding of some of this. And yet I live my life dealing with people in Cameron's position where he understands that an utterance can contain evidence. I don't know why he's conflating a discrete claim of a proposition of fact with an utterance that also includes evidence. That seems to be the equivocation misunderstanding at the foundation of this. But here's a guy who doesn't accept that alien abductions happen. I don't either. And yet he's about to explain, I'm predicting, when he says, I can have evidence for a proposition without it being sufficient to warrant accepting the proposition, he's about to explain why he doesn't accept alien abduction scenarios, but does accept the thing for which there is less good evidence, and that is that there's a God. And the only difference that people can ever get to here is essentially an argumentum ad populum fallacy. That yes, there are quite a few alien abduction stories, but they're not of the common variety. They're not of the exhaustive experience within the real world of religious claims. And so the story of convenience is to say that the overwhelming majority, 90%+ of people who have ever lived have at some time in their life believed in a God. And this represents a uniformity of experience. And so it doesn't matter that they had different views about God all over the place. It doesn't matter that they're all human beings trying to solve similar problems with a similar brain with similar information. And so they're likely to come up with similarly wrong answers. It is, hey, there are just too many people having these experiences for me to dismiss them in the way that I would dismiss an alien abduction claim. That is fallacious at every single turn. That is not the way we go about figuring out what's real.
Also note here that the evidence that we have in this case is a claim from a witness.
Ha 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 ha. So I spend some time on stage pretending to read people's minds. And I spend some time on the show making a game out of the show where if a game that I play in my head is, can I predict where people are going? I did not predict, that, by the way, that he was going to highlight that thing and take a sip out of his coffee with a wry look at the camera. So good on you, Cameron, for punctuating that like that. But it's extra funny to me, given that I go back to the comment that I made on his Facebook page about stop looking for gotchas, because his coffee cup might as well have just said gotcha. As a matter of fact, I want to order him a coffee cup that says gotcha so that he can always do that, because it wasn't a gotcha at all. It's still rooted in his misunderstanding and his conflation of claims and evidence. But that guy needs a coffee cup that says gotcha more than anybody I've ever seen.
You know what? I'm going to throw a limited time Cameron-inspired gotcha mug up at my Teespring store. Link in the description. If you know Cameron's address, someone please send him one.
In other words, the question is not about whether we have any evidence for the resurrection. The question is, how good is the evidence? How strong is the evidence for the resurrection? Now, whether or not Matt would agree with this, I think he should agree with this.
Matt does agree with that, and I'm sure that we can go back and find many times over the years where Matt has said exactly that. Now, you could probably find a clip where I say, there's no evidence for God. There's no evidence for the resurrection. That is, unfortunately, a human thing that happens where we engage in hyperbole. I work frequently to minimize hyperbole and be as clear as possible. But on occasion, I have probably said, there's no evidence for a resurrection, when what I mean is, there's no good evidence for a resurrection. And when I talk about the Bible as the claim, I would agree that we have testimonial accounts that are probably second or third hand at best of an event that he's identifying as the resurrection of Jesus. He's correct in saying, do we have sufficient evidence to conclude that this event actually happened? And my answer is no. But his answer is yes. And this is the crux of the entire discussion. It doesn't matter all this secondary thing about utterances and claims and evidence and everything else. This is the core. He's convinced that the accounts in the Gospels are sufficient to conclude A, that the resurrection happened, and then when he adds in a bunch of other stuff, get to B, it is because he was divine and from God. And my answer is, no, it's not. And that's the thing that needs to be discussed and debated. And the reason that he talked about aliens at all is because I have as well. It's because I point out that if you don't believe alien abduction stories, but do believe the resurrection, you are believing something on weaker footing. We'll see if the rest of my predictions come through, because I'm expecting an argumentum ad populum in here, although I expect that it will probably be veiled. But really, it's going to come down to Cameron believes these accounts are from trustworthy, reliable individuals and accepts that what they're describing is true. And yet when Cameron looks at alien abduction scenarios, he may also believe that these are coming from honest people, but that they were just wrong or misrepresented or something else was going on, or there's not enough accounts of them to get there. But we'll see.
So here's what he could say. He could say, I can admit that claims about the miraculous can provide some evidence for miracles, but they can't provide sufficient evidence for miracles.
I wouldn't say they can't provide sufficient evidence. I would argue that they don't provide sufficient evidence. I'm not making claims about what can or can't be demonstrated. That's not even in the ballpark of what I was saying.
Notice how far we've come from the original claim.
Yes, let's notice that. My original claim was that there's a distinction between a claim and the evidence in support of that claim. Something that if we were all using the same terms, I'm pretty sure Cameron agrees with, because all of his examples of claims that include evidence are demonstrably a claim that includes some evidence, however weak it may be, included in the claim. I saw this happen. Here's a testimony of this happening. He's not making the distinction between this happened and I saw that this happened at all. So we've moved from my claim that claims in and of themselves are not evidence, drawing a distinction between a claim and evidence, to claims that include evidence clearly are claims that have evidence, to Matt wants to rule out miraculous and supernatural. Matt wants to arbitrarily exclude potential explanations. Matt wants to look at this and say, this cannot ever be sufficient evidence, when the truth is, what Matt is saying is, this is not sufficient evidence to warrant belief. And my foundation for saying that is about having consistent values with regard to quality and quantity of evidence. So I'm the one that excludes both alien abduction scenarios and a resurrection. Cameron is now in the position of excluding alien abduction scenarios, but accepting a resurrection. And now he wants to see how far we've strayed from the topic. I'm glad he at least notices how far we've strayed from even the misunderstood topic that he purportedly started this video to address.
At first, the claim was simply, claims are not evidence. Then the claim became, claims about the miraculous are not evidence. And now the new claim is, claims about the miraculous are not sufficient evidence.
Am I psychic?
You may be.
The weird thing here is that I agree. We started with claims are not evidence, something I clarified really quickly in a single statement that would have curtailed this entire video. And he's right. It then shifted in the exact manner that he described. But who did the shifting? I didn't do the shifting. I didn't create a video that started with a misunderstanding of what I meant by claims are not evidence and then turn it into claims of miraculous things are not evidence and cannot be evidence. I didn't do that. Cameron did it. This is him grabbing bits of straw and constructing a straw man right in front of you. And then one of the smartest things you can ever do is if there's a problem with your case is to hang a lantern on it. You see this trope in sci-fi and fantasy things all the time where something doesn't make sense. So you hang a lantern on it. You point out,
acknowledge it.
Doesn't make any sense.
Okay, look, the city is flying. We're fighting an army of robots. And I have a bow and arrow. None of this makes sense.
But, you know, it's a way to undermine this. So what Cameron is literally doing right now is like, we started straw, straw, straw with claims aren't evidence. And I turned it into this monstrosity. How did we get here? It's clearly a problem with Matt.
You maybe should look into the psychic thing. You may have a career there.
Yeah. I'm going to predict I don't.
And also, this is just like a quick side note. Did you notice that all of these are claims?
Did you notice that all of these are utterances?
If claims are not evidence, we have no evidence that anything that Matt said, any of these principles, these philosophical principles, are true. And maybe you think that Matt does have evidence for these principles, but he didn't give any in the debate. He doesn't really ever do that. Something to think about. Marinate on that a little bit.
Maybe you should think about it a little bit, Cameron. And if instead of researching aliens, you had actually gone out and researched what I'd said previously or responded to me, we could have had this thing solved really quickly in that what I mean when I say claims are not evidence is not the same thing that you mean when you, and I'm going to paraphrase here for clarity, talk about an utterance that includes a claim and evidence.
All right, so continuing my Bertusian breakdown.
I think we can all agree this is a Bertusian breakdown.
But imagine that instead of having like one person ID the suspect, we now had 10 independent witnesses that all ID'd the same suspect. Now we have a lot more evidence. What's the probability that 10 independent eyewitnesses would all ID the same person?
So not only do I feel prescient in knowing that we were probably going to go to some sort of argumentum ad populum, look at what Cameron's actually doing here. Now, I will happily agree. If there were 10 eyewitnesses, that would be much stronger than one. We know that eyewitnesses can be wrong. And yes, that means 10 eyewitnesses can be wrong. However, when it comes to examples of eyewitnesses for the resurrection, how many do we have where we have a firsthand account by their own word? Oh, that's zero. How many do we have who were interviewed and part of an investigation to conclude how reliable their particular testimony was? Oh, that's right. It's zero. What Cameron's doing is not coming to me and saying, hey, I have 10 people. Cameron's coming to me with a book that says there were 10 people that was written last week, and none of the 10 people are around to investigate. And so it's a many different tiered account that makes it not the same. He's comparing a reasonable account, to use his language, with an unreasonable one and trying to pretend they're the same. In the same way that at the beginning of this, we started with one understanding of the word claim and conflated it with another understanding of the word claim in order to say that I'm wrong about what I'm saying. And the thing is, I'm pretty sure that if Cameron and I sat down and went with discrete, a claim is a statement in utterance of a purported fact. An utterance can include claims and evidence. We'd both agree. If we didn't, I'd be shocked. I'd be as shocked as he is. I'd have to grab my gotcha mug.
enough claims can provide sufficient evidence.
Holy fuck, it's the gotcha mug again.
Now, unfortunately, murders do happen, but they're very rare. It's very unlikely that any particular individual is going to be a murderer.
I would agree with Cameron. So while it is incredibly unlikely that any particular specified person is a murderer, it is absolutely mundane that murders occur and they are committed by murderers. The actual claim that a resurrection of this nature occurred would be like saying we have a psychic murderer who can stand outside someone's home, project their thoughts inside of the home, and that person's head explodes. And the evidence for this psychic murder is that I have here a room that someone told me used to contain a body with its head exploded, but it doesn't now.
From an agnostic philosopher named John Earman, Hume's Abject Failure. He was able to create the illusion of a powerful argument by maintaining ambiguities in his claims against miracles by the use of forceful prose and confident pronouncements. Sound like anybody you know?
Sounds like a lot of people I know. Preachers.
Wait, the quote was, the illusion of a powerful argument by use of forceful prose and confident pronouncements. Isn't that just another way to say claims aren't evidence? The very phrase your video is railing against, Cameron?
Supposing that he was intending that to reference me, he should have grabbed the cup again. You know, sound like anybody you know? And then should take another cup, another sip. But have I even appeared in this video since the beginning when I...
You have not. You have not.
Yeah. So the entirety of this video is based on, he asked me to explain what I meant by claims and evidence. I came up with an adequate definition of claim, but I came up with an inadequate definition of evidence, which sent his alarm bells ringing. And then he has spent a bunch of time misrepresenting my intent without engaging with me at all, building up this up into claims aren't evidence to claims of miracles aren't evidence to they can't be evidence to Matt is just dazzling you with prose and confidence in order to discount miracles. Well, no, this debate wasn't about discounting a miracle. My job as a skeptic is not to debunk or discount miracles. The apologist's job is to present compelling evidence for a claim. And then if they want to claim that it was supernatural in origin, they have the extra added burden of demonstrating that the best explanation for this claim is supernatural. And when I point out that they haven't provided evidence or sufficient evidence for that, I'm not saying a miracle did not occur. I'm saying you have not made your case. This is the thing. Cameron thinks or wants to pretend that I am engaged in just uttering things with confidence and dazzling people with my snazzy prose, which is literally, and I'm loath to use that word, what I would argue the overwhelming majority of preachers and apologists are doing on a regular basis. And instead, I'm not saying the claim is wrong. I'm saying you have not presented the evidence to warrant believing your claim. Now, skepticism isn't confident, dazzling prose. It is about putting the burden of proof where it rests and waiting to accept something until that burden of proof has been met. It is not the fault of me or my dazzling prose that he strawmans me. He comes up with an example of a murder as if murders and resurrections are on a par with regard to the evidence for them happening in general, misunderstands probability, highlights how far we've departed from the topic that he started with when he's the one who's departed, spends his time investigating aliens when this could have all been resolved quicker. I would argue that even in this exchange, which isn't even an exchange between us, that the one making confident assertions in dazzling prose is not me.
Well, I can't think of a better note to end on. Thanks for coming on and subjecting yourself to this, Matt.
Yeah, no, it's great. I wasn't going to address this at all. I wanted to just fix this without having to go through it in detail. And now I see that it was worse than I imagined. And evidently, I'm somewhat moderately psychic.
Well, I predict some people will continue to miss the point. But hopefully, this clarified things for others.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time, Matt. It's always best to go to the source when you can.
Thanks, Paul.
Stay safe.
You too, bud.
All right. I'm recording and testing. Yes, I can. Of course I can record this, Paul. I'm an expert.
Perfect.
I'm a professional. What the fuck did you think asking me a stupid question like that?
That was a Bertuzian question.